Hi, I'm Liz Larson.
And I'm Bill McKenna. We're the hosts of the New Life Perspectives radio show.
We're also the creators of the Cogno Movement System, where we help you rewire your nervous system so you can rewire your reality.
Join us each week for great conversations, amazing guests, and cutting-edge information on health, consciousness, and the keys to transformation.
What is that thing? You know, when you know when someone's going to call you from 3,000 miles away, the phone rings and it's them. What is it when you can sense that someone's looking at you from across a crowded room? You look up and sure enough, they're staring right at you. What is that thing when you can smell your grandmother's perfume and she's been dead for many, many years? It turns out that these subtle senses are the thing that is picking up what feels like the metaphysical to us. But it's not new, and it turns out it's not woo-woo. Our most ancient philosophers talked about these things in their writings thousands of years ago, calling them the astral body or the luminous atmosphere of the body. Aristotle called it the pneuma, a vital breath or warm vapor within and surrounding the body that served as a carrier for life and, get this, perception. So many times we call this the metaphysical or extrasensory perception. But as it turns out, it may be our basic perception, but it's the way our brain processes or doesn't process this information that gives us the ability or lack of that ability. So, Bill, we've been talking about this off camera, about how many of these senses really probably just get disregarded when all it really is a setting of the brain that needs to be tuned in, right? Or tuned up, maybe.
Yeah, these senses we have, as it turns out, each and every one of them has what you might call the ordinary range of perception. You know, there is a frequency that your average human can pick up auditorily. And this frequency actually, as we age, seems to close down. We can't hear some of the higher frequency sounds. We can hear the lower frequency sounds. And this is, you know, part of the natural process. But as it turns out, all the senses actually are frequency based. And we humans can actually activate a broader range of frequency. And it seems like supernatural, but actually all it is just a broader spectrum that we're receiving or sending.
Yeah, and we know that in ancient history specifically, that these things were not only noticed or, you know, considered true, but highly regarded. I was talking to somebody about the Sibyls in ancient Rome and how they would get information, you know, from the ether and provide it to the emperor. And the most famous Sibyl, the reason that we have the called the leaves of a book, leaves, is she would take her information to him, and she was telling him that Rome was going to fall. And he wouldn't listen. He wouldn't listen to the point where he finally had her killed. But before that, she had written everything down on leaves.
Oh.
And so, yeah, that's why they call the pages leaves now.
Really? But
these Sibyls were definitely advisors. People had a vizier, which is an advisor, who had extrasensory perception. They could hear, they could smell, they could feel, they knew things that would help these royals make decisions. So it wasn't just known, it was highly regarded. But as we've come closer to modern medicine and science, we've taken those out. We completely disregard them. And people who have extrasensory perception, who can not only feel, tune into them, and but process them, are considered quacks, crazy, nuts, you know? When realistically, they just happen to have a system that has the ability to translate that information. So it becomes interesting in that way.
It is. Now, you were saying earlier off camera about one of the reasons that all of this has been thrown out and discounted, even though it was known in ancient times, was the medical community about the biofield. What happened there, and when did it happen that it was basically dismissed as not real science?
Well, it was, you know, real science goes back to Plato, Aristotle. I can't pronounce his name, but it's Plotinus, even into the 3rd century CE, knew about and talked about basically bioelectric and energetic physiology. The luminous atmosphere around the body, knowing that this was actually a physical part of our body, not a woo-woo thing, you know, not just an auric field, but actually an organ. So this was well known in, you know, quote unquote medicine, about something that was then called, turned into the vital field around the body, or the biofield, or vital force, or even called animal magnetism, until the early 1900s. It was still considered the atmosphere, or the aura, or the vital field, sometimes called a vitalism. The living organs had a vitalism. Even in Franz Mesmer, you know, mesmerizing, animal magnetism, talked about this in the 1800s. Baron Reichenbach in the mid-1800s, something called an odic force that referred back to those Greek concepts of the pneuma and the ether. But about the 1900s, something came in called mechanistic science, or modern biochemistry. And at that time, the vital field was dismissed and removed from modern medicine. So between 1910 and 1920, and especially after something called the Flexner Report reconstructed medical education. So at that point, it was removed and relegated to woo-woo.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. Well, as it so often happens, when you get to be as old as I am, I'm not going to include anybody else in this. I'm just going to say, as old as I am, you've seen science like it's true. Let's say there's a particular medication or procedure that is considered absolutely state of the art and 100% true, and no side effects. And then it turns out later on, decades later, that it's like, oh, we didn't mean that. Turns out it's not so good. And it's really harmed people. Anyway, this is this particular situation for many decades, it was relegated to the arena of woo-woo. But today, we know scientifically that this actually exists. This biofield is electric. And there is now technology out there that proves this. There is many universities around the globe that Everybody knows about EEGs, right? You put a cap on your head, they put a little goo, it messes up your hair if you've got it. And they can measure your brain waves with this. And today there's something called an MEG, which is magnetoencephalography. This magnetoencephalography is really interesting because the cap is not on your head. There are sensors out in space. They're called squids. It's basically like a quantum sensor. And this sensor senses the electrical charge that you put off when you have a thought. And it's right beyond your physical brain. It's out in the field. There's a little shock, a little electrical charge. And this electrical charge out in the field not only is sensed by these squid sensors, but it maps it to your brain, and they can tell all the stuff that an EEG can tell. So we know that our thoughts are not local. Going back to one of the things that Liz was just talking about is, how do I know that somebody's got their attention on me? They're looking at me, and I can feel it. Well, guess what? This electrical charge actually travels. It travels beyond the body and it keeps going. That's why, half a world away, something's going on, with somebody that you're close to.
We take for granted the waves that are going through the air all the time. Radio was first, then TV, right? Now there's cell phone waves. And if I pick up my phone and I call somebody in Europe and they pick up right now, we don't have a problem with that at all, right? And only these bodies are a much bigger supercomputer than that, a much bigger supercomputer than these phones. If you don't think that it can send and receive a signal, well, that just doesn't even make sense. It's silly, right? But because we have extracted that out of our common knowledge that we can send and receive signals just like any of these machines can, and it's been, relegated to the woo-woo or the weird or the quackery, we just don't recognize it anymore. So people who have this ability, well, they're witches or crazies or, something like that. But it's actually, like you said, now scientifically available to see it. And we're experiencing it all the time with other kinds of equipment, including cell phones and TV.
All of this was proven out by Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon. So Edgar Mitchell, when he went to outer space, he brought with him a bunch of cards, and he did scientific tests. Like these cards, I forget the name of them, but they'll be like an X, there'll be squiggly lines, there'll be like a plus symbol, a minus symbol. There's like a circle, different symbols. And what he would do is he's in outer space and he pulls out the cards at a given time, and he would look and concentrate at them, and people on the ground were able to pick up the signal of what he was focused on. So this was proven that, as far away as a human has ever been, the signal can travel. Not only that, but the Stanford Research Institute, SRI. So the SRI was funded by the CIA. This is back in the 70s and definitely into the 80s. And I don't know how long it went on for, but it was a long time. And they were able to prove out that you can sense when somebody's looking at you. And they did all kinds of scientific test to prove out, not only can you sense when somebody's looking at you, but also that You know ahead of time, your body knows ahead of time a threat. They would show photos on a screen. You know, there's a waterfall, there's the next picture is the beach, and the next picture is a little baby laughing, and then the next picture, rattlesnake, and you know, with its fangs out, like you know, and it would be they were monitoring all the systems, and you would have a response in your body before the rattlesnake picture showed up.
Yeah, well, you were talking about vibration. We know that color is vibration. Whether it's on a paper or on a TV screen, it is a vibration that we can decode, that we can pick up. So it would make perfect sense that the vibration of that symbol that's on the next picture, that we can pick it up. It's available there for us. So we'll take our first break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about why some of us are really great at this, and why some of us aren't, and whether or not a person can open up a part of their brain that will allow for them to have these extrasensory perceptions whenever they wish. So let's take a quick break, and we'll hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we are back. We're talking about extrasensory perception, but not just psychic abilities. Smell, taste, touch, right? Sending signals back and forth. And we were talking about how really the ancient peoples knew about this, and they knew about it in a scientific way. We shut that right down, right? Took it right out, forgot about it, to where now all of that is just considered silliness until the last couple of decades, in which machinery has been created that actually shows the auric field, Corellian photography, right?
Yeah.
The EEGs, the CAT scans, even PET scans, even can see the electricity moving within the body, but also outside of the body as well. So, what we know about this is that there's a part of our brain, and it's in our brain stem, that restricts or opens to let in information. Then the next piece is our own brain balance and whether or not our brain is in a connected state or a disconnected state. That determines how good we can send and receive these signals, but mostly how well we can perceive them and actually utilize them for information, right?
Right. And for most people, you kind of just have it. You know, it's like, oh, you just have this other sense that, you know, other people just don't experience. And what I found is that most of us have like one of those. Some people it's hearing. Some people it's smell, some people it's taste, some people it's a feeling, like they can tell when there's danger, like way before anybody else can. You know, they're like, don't go over there, you know, don't go in that elevator, you know.
Well, and a
And,
lot of women get this when they have a baby. All of a
yeah.
sudden, they know what's going on with that baby, no matter where they are on the planet.
Yeah.
Again, it's called mother's intuition.
Well, that mother's intuition, there's science behind it. Turns out that the DNA of the mother is lodged in the baby. And the baby's DNA is lodged in the mother's liver. They can actually, if you go into the mother's liver, you'll find the baby's DNA. So there's an actual mechanism that's they've scientifically found there that assists in this antenna type of send receive. But I want to tell a little story about a weird experience and then the science that sent me down a rabbit hole. So a long time ago and far away, I was aboard my vessel at the time, and I was meditating. And when I meditated, I had this vision come to me. And the vision in this meditation, I felt like I was floating. I was in such bliss, and I swear, my arms and legs, I don't know if my body was floating, but I felt like it. I didn't open my eyes, but it was amazing. And I saw this vision of the Virgin Mary just showed up. I was in this bliss. She's there. I was like, I don't know how long I was in it, but I was like, man, this is freaking great. And anyway, finished up. I don't know how long I was in it for. And I walked up the stairs into the pilot house. And as soon as I walked upstairs, there was this incredible smell of roses. And at the time, my first thought was, damn it, my wife, she must have spilled rose oil into the cushions. I'm never going to get this out of here. I'm like, what am I going to do? And it's like, and I looked around, I was like, it's got to be, and she was sleeping. So I didn't say anything. I was just going around, and the rose smell was so intense. It was like, 100 dozen roses and somebody turned the heater on. I mean, it's just overwhelming rose. And I go down, I still remember I got my coffee and I, stuck in the microwave, beep. And I'm like, drinking my wine. I was like, damn it, where's the roses? And there were some dead roses and I smelled those and it smelled like dead vegetation. Didn't smell like a rose. And finally, I'm there and I'm like, damn it. I was smelling all the cushions. Nothing is there. Then I finally am like, oh my God. I wonder if it had anything to do with Mary. And I go over to the computer and I Google Virgin Mary smell of roses. And that's all I typed in. I hit click and boom. Turns out I'm not the only one. There were all kinds of reports when she shows up. That's the smell. I called somebody that is somebody who's spent their life in that whole Catholic religion thing, and it's hey, what's going on here? Oh well, I guess sometimes that happens. It's like, oh thanks. Anyway, I basked in that. I remember just sitting in. Basking in it. And I was like, man, this is incredible. I wish I could save it somehow. I kept all the doors and windows closed and everything. Anyway, fast forward. I'm watching TEDx and there's a guy on TEDx, The Science of Scent. And his name is Luca Turin. You need to watch this episode. It's on TEDx. You can find it on YouTube. And anyway, Luca is a biophysicist. So I hope I got that right, Luca. But he's over in Europe, and he got a contract with a perfumer. And the perfumer wanted him to recreate a particular base component of perfumes. And it was incredibly expensive. So he said, if you can recreate this chemically, it'll be worth hundreds of millions of dollars to us. So he ends up going to work. And he had this weird idea. And this weird idea was that scent is not a particle, but it's a particular vibration. I was like, what the, that sounds freaking weird to me. It's a vibration. So he goes off and he talks about there's a vibration of fecal matter. They figured out, okay, it vibrates at whatever, 60 hertz. Well, the rocket fuel, supposedly, real rocket fuel supposedly is, I'm making it up, but let's call it 60 hertz or whatever. And it was rocket fuel vibrates at 60 hertz. And he wanted to see, does rocket fuel smell like poop? So he goes to order it, and he was talking in the video that, rocket fuel, they don't sell a vial of it. They sell it in container, like massive amounts. They sell these huge containers of rocket fuel. And so anyway, somehow he ends up getting the rocket fuel. He opens it up and full on sulfur, poop smell. So anyway, Luca Turin had discovered that in fact smell is a vibration. You're smelling the vibration. And I went off and I got a list of the vibrations of all kinds of different scents. And I'm making it up, but I remember lemons or something like, 100 hertz, garlic, whatever, 80 hertz, or so on and so forth. But at the very top of the vibrations, at 320 hertz, roses. It was the highest hertz out there. And I was like, well, now doesn't that make sense? Anyway, it's a, I spent years with trying to recreate scents through a frequency generating machine. I went and bought this, $8,000 machine, and I'm trying to dial it up to create the frequencies. And anyway, I know it can be done. I there's more to it, but there's an interesting thing, and the point being is that with the experience of Mary showing up, I know that you can detect a frequency that is not the particulate. That's the thing.
Well, and it matches what we know about vibration and consciousness. So we know that when the body is relaxed, so you were in deep meditation, when the body is relaxed and it's out of fight or flight to the point where the body uses that energy for other things like extrasensory perception, also your consciousness level rises. So at that level of 500, love or above vibration of a human body, it would make sense that you're able to also perceive those much higher vibratory scents as well, especially if you were calling in something that matches, that vibration. So if you guys are loving this and you would like to know how to get your system to downregulate, open the brainstem so that you can actually get this information to the frontal lobes to be considered and translated into real information. We have a class that starts October 30th. There's no mistake there. We are really starting around this Halloween energy. Another one of the three-part series will be on a portal day, full moon. We'll have an 11-11 portal class. It's going to be amazing, but we will teach you exactly how to not only tune into, but really tune up all of these, what are called extrasensory perceptions, to the point where you can see more and you'll know how to do it when you want to. So let's take a quick break and we'll hear from the good folks at the UK Health Radio Network.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, and we're back. We are talking about ESP, but in the real scientific way, that it's true that we have these senses. They can be opened and tuned up. And there's all kinds of mechanisms out there now to show it is quite real. Like Bill was talking about, you know, vibrations and scents. We were talking about the MEG that can see your thoughts. You know, now you can actually have a dream printed out.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Tell us about that, Liz. This is so bizarre to me. Tell us about that.
Well, Michio Kaku talked about it, about this machinery that now measures and translates the images in your head as you're dreaming them into an actual picture. And so you're sleeping, so you can't see, but the people that are monitoring these images are seeing printouts of what you're dreaming about, which shows that that dream is real in terms that it has enough mass to be translated into a physical image. It's amazing. And the earliest ones were blurrier, and they're getting clearer and clearer as the machinery, as the technology, you know, happens. There's one more scientific thing I want to talk about in terms of like receiving information from people, you know, that you're not right next to, like that mother's intuition. And do you know that there are tests that were done on entangled photons? In 1972, there was what was called the Friedman-Clauser experiments. And these experiments go all the way back to 1935 with Einstein, the Einstein-Rosen experiment. But in 72, they were able to split a photon and then take that photons, you know, to different rooms they started with. And they would flip the polarization on one of the sides of the proton, and the other one would flip. Now they're not in the same room and they're not connected anymore, which gave them the idea that there was a continued entanglement between the two. And in 1982, which is the most famous and definitive demonstration, the team put other influences on the photon and showed that instantaneously, when separated by miles sometimes, that the photon that was not being directly influenced had the same response as the one that was being influenced. The interesting thing about this is it was faster than light. So that was the issue, and that was the problem that Einstein had with it, is that the action and the reaction happened faster than light could travel. So when we think about this and translate it into people, a mother and a child, they share photons, right? You affect one and you're going to affect the other. Twins, you have this with. But then it turns out that when we're in each other's neurological soup, in that auric field or the atmosphere of the body that we talked about, those fields become attuned to recognize each other. And no matter where they are on the planet, that signal can be sent and received much faster than light. Isn't that fascinating? Don't you think? I think it's crazy fascinating.
It is fascinating. And you know, the proof of information moving beyond the speed of light. That is really, really awesome. We know that's true.
And we're made of photons. So why would we be excluded from that scientific fact? We're not.
Yeah. We're not.
Just can't always perceive it. So this has to do with our executive function, frontal lobes, being able to not only take in the information, because I think we're always taking it in, but whether or not we can process it and then make something of it. So information comes in through all of the senses, but then it's considered by the brainstem, that reticular activating system in the limbic system, and it will let in only so much information, so not as not to overwhelm the brain. And it's usually focused on threat assessment, what's going to kill you or not. So I think people who just naturally have this have a more open reticular activating system. But then if it gets through the information, then it has to be processed by the frontal lobes. Well, okay, so it gets processed and you're like, eh, okay, so I felt something or I smelled something. Disregard, right? But when the brain is actually hyperconnected, meaning now that information is considered by the whole rest of the system, now the whole rest of the system can be like, no, actually, that was a real input. And here's the meaning of it. And here's what to do about it next, right? So you need the whole system to be in set up so that it can translate and actually process the information and then know what to do with it. So some people, when they get information that doesn't seem like it's written down, or somebody just spoke it, like spooky action at a distance, like Einstein would say, they're able to naturally process that and know exactly what it is. Where the rest of us might just, you know, you might have a picture, you might have a smell, you might feel somebody touching you, but you don't really know what to do with it. So it just simply gets tossed out with all of the other information that's going on around you all the time that your brain just doesn't pay attention to. But like you were talking about, Bill, in meditation, all of a sudden you had this amazing experience. If you know how to create the proper inputs to relax that reticular activating system, to get the information to the frontal lobes quickly, and then to create that hyperconnectivity, any person can learn how to access all of these senses. Now, I think some of us are going to be better at some than the others. You might have a natural proclivity. But realistically, throughout all of the thousands of people that we've worked with, there is a theme. Most of them have greater psychic ability, greater ability to see things that they couldn't see before. They're hearing things that weren't available before. And many of them also talk about taste and smell as well, coming online. And then they know what to do with it. They know how to interpret it, which is a big part of it. And that's that thing we'll be teaching in the class, is the basics for how to have that experience and translate it into something useful, which I think is the most important part.
That's really what it comes down to. Is it useful? Is it practical? I mean, you know, all these things, you know, like, you know, it's interesting, you know, but is there a practical application for it? And you know, some of the practical applications that over time we've seen is what not to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, over there, something wrong, or, you know, don't date that person, you mm-hmm. know, that type of thing. Or don't pick up that phone, that whatever that is, that number, no. Others are the yes, you know, like definitely date that one and, you know, definitely, you know, talk to that one. Or very interesting is around business deals, is, you know, there's something wrong here. And it's this aspect, you know, the offering, let's say you're going to buy whatever it is, but the sensory is like the product works and everything, but it's the issue really is in delivery, and okay, you're telling me, all works and I can get it today, but when you start to get a feeling like they're not going to be able to deliver on time, and that's going to screw things up, and then my vacation or something, I can't work it out. And you start drilling into it, and you're like, aha, aha, it's aha. So, it's these little practical things of life that you can get a useful benefit out of, or just knowing the right thing to say. The work that all the practitioners, Liz, myself, the practitioners around the globe, knowing the right thing to do at the right time, that this person needs this, it's that, and being of service to somebody, and that service doesn't end in a session. It's when you're walking into the grocery store. It's when you're driving on the street. It's all the time. So anyway, there's so many practical uses beyond Las Vegas that people have, and it's pretty fun. It's an enhanced life.
Communication is a huge one when you start to live this way. So at first, what happens is people will use it and the threat activating system gets big, like, oh, ooh, that's bad. Oh, the energy here is bad, or that's level one. But when this skill really matures, it becomes a thing where it helps you in communication so much you feel the energy of the room change. You know when, okay, that advice I was about to give, they're not going to receive that. So you're able to just relax in and listen. And sometime later in that conversation, or a few days later, all of a sudden the awareness comes that they're now available to receive that information, right? There's other things. Smell is one of those things. There are people, and I'm one of them, where you can smell if a person is not well. Especially with your family. Like, I know when somebody's about to get sick, I can smell their body smells different, or maybe the breath a little bit, And I'm like, all right, you're on NERB for the next 3 days, So there are these things where you relax into the world and you actually start to perceive so much more. Now, whether you act on it or not, also as a part of that deepening maturity and also calming of the nervous system. Like in the beginning, it can be jarring for people. So you react to everything, right? Like having a new skill. But after a while, it's just a part of who you are. And you're more a part of nature because you're able to perceive what's been there all along. You can see it, you can taste it, you can smell it, you can touch it. And you just enjoy it. And then there are those times when, because you have this skill, you can save someone's life. Right before something's going to happen, or right after, you're able to calm your system and know exactly how to take care of that situation. So I like the way you said it, Bill. It really can be very, very useful in everyday life. And I think that's the point. It starts out as a party trick, parlor trick, right? And turns into just a way to live. So we've actually come to the end of this episode. We've got about 2 minutes. We really want to invite everyone to come to the Pierce the Veil class starting October 30th. Go to cognomovement.com/pierce-the-veil. There's a free class. It was a recording of a Cogno hour that we did that will get you started opening up these extrasensory perceptions. And then for 3 weeks, we're going to have three consecutive classes that will really help your body and your brain learn how to interpret all of it. So it was fun being here with you today, Bill. Thanks for
That
all
was
your
fun.
great info.
That was fun. All right. Hope to see you all on the class. It'll be fun. I guarantee it. You're gonna experience some new things.
Yeah, it's always fun. That is for sure. A lot of joking around, but a lot of serious and heartfelt information. All right, you guys, until next time, be safe and be well.
Thanks for being here with us on the New Life Perspective Radio Show. For more information or to find out more about the work that Bill and I do, please visit us at cognomovement.com or email us at info@cognomovement.com. See you again soon.